a wild man.
I want you to struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jordan Hare Stadium time is 8:29 p.m. Central Standard Time. Your digital audio device is tuned to the Orange and True podcast, harbored by College at Magnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It's I, Drew Croson, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter. You can find me at Son of Crow on Venmo. To one side of me, the rumor monger, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for show notes, optional.
No show notes. The S stands for Sharif because I saw him hit a three from midcourt today in practice, and I want to see that in the game now.
It was a Instagram story video of someone else's laptop, so about as high quality as it's gotten so far. To the other side of me, a guy who really loves giving you that Fort Penn ASMR you pay us so much money for, the AU Chief.
I'll see you in the beginning, my friend.
And special guest, friend of the podcast, owner, operator, proprietor of the Auburn Observer, Justin Ferguson. Justin, how are you?
I'm making it, man. It's that time of year where you're just like, all right, can we get to whatever this is afterwards? Like, I'm hoping for it. Christmas was great. Let's just push on ahead. I think bowl week's getting to me, where the weirdest bowl ever is about to happen. Yeah. I'm just like, does anyone care?
The Citrus Bowl.
Press no, Super Sim.
No one cares.
Guys,
no one.
It reminds me of a Waylon Jennings song. If we make it through December. If we make it through December, mm-hmm. Auburn will have a new football coach. We'll probably start hiring some assistant coaches and coordinators. And Justin will have some of that sweet, sweet content to provide to his loyal subscribers. And you should be one of those subscribers if you're not already, for this low, low price of $69 a year, Justin. Is that correct?
Actually, it's 60. It's actually $60 a year. If you want to give $69 a year, I'll tweet at you or something. That'd be dope.
It'd be a much nicer price.
It would be a nicer price, and I would be lying if I said that didn't actually pop into my head at one point during the building process. I believe the guys at Defector have a tier that's like $69 a year, and it's like, yeah, that makes sense. But no, it's $60 a year or $6 a month if you just want to try it out. And a lot of people jumped on board. It's been a really good year for all of the weirdness and all of the badness of 2020. Yes. It's been a fun few months.
Yeah, and I think this bowl week, like you mentioned, the weirdest bowl week ever. Like, Kevin Steele's coaching the bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, like?
And Chad Morris. God. Like, Chad Morris is going to be calling plays on offense. Like, he's still there. I think people haven't realized that one yet.
And those guys have got to be like auditioning for future employment. Like, that's got to be what they're thinking.
One would think, and so you know, I get tweets all the time, and I get it, and I get why people are asking. They're like, what are you hearing about the new staff? And I'm like, guys, they've got a football game to play on Friday. Like,
yeah,
they're not going to do anything until after that. You might hear some things beforehand, but like, guys could still be retained. Guys could still be not. Like, Harsin's going to be around, and so that's going to be an interesting thing as well. Like, South Carolina fired Will Muschamp in the middle of the season, and just recently they just announced who Shane Beamer was retaining on his staff there.
Like, and he's retaining most of the staff.
Right. Yeah.
Including Mike
Bobo.
When you
do that, you're like, you probably made the right decision. Good job, everyone.
Yeah.
Paid a lot of money to get rid of like a couple of people.
Yeah.
Which was all, almost what Auburn did.
I think there will be a press conference at 10 p.m. New Year's Eve saying who they're keeping.
I would love it, honestly. As someone who doesn't do anything, especially during COVID, it'd just be like, you know, put the most inopportune times to have these press conferences. And I'll be honest with you guys. There's a lot of grief going around about that. But I wrote it the other day. I was like, it doesn't matter. Like, for us in the media, and I use that term loosely for me, that press conference was live stream. Anybody could watch it. This was right. Brian Harsin talking to the fans. That's right. All that mattered. Like, we barely got, like, I didn't get to ask a question. Only a few of us got to ask questions at the end. Because, like, what is he going to say right now?
Some people got to wish him a Merry Christmas.
Some people got to immediately jump on and remind them that they are in Birmingham and that they are sworn to ask about the Crimson Tide at all costs.
Yeah.
It was one of those things where, like, I understand people were upset, but I was also like, yeah, this is a TV show almost for Auburn fans. Yeah. It's like, who the heck? You had no idea who this guy was a few days earlier. Here you go.
Honestly, what is everybody doing at 2:30 in the afternoon on Christmas Eve anyway, or whatever time it was? It was like
the funniest thought was to me was like, what is the question that these guys like that you guys think? Oh heck yeah! If it's my turn, I'm gonna ask him this question. That's gonna really make him answer.
I'll be honest with you, he was not going into any specifics. No. Obviously, he wasn't going into. It was very generic. I'm the new coach. Here's what you need to know about me.
He doesn't know what he's doing.
He may have not ever been to Alabama before, the state.
Right, exactly. My question, if they would have gotten to me in line, my question was going to be, what does having a fourth and one mentality mean? Like how do you apply that? Because people were tweeting about it, like, what does that even mean? Sounds cool. And I was like, all right, we'll ask him. But then it's you're gonna only get like motivational, you know, generic program building. You know, big picture stuff like that. So there will be plenty of time to talk to him about specifics.
Yeah.
We're about to go through a weird offseason again.
Yeah. Hopefully fourth and one mentality doesn't mean getting shoved 2 yards off the line by LSU at home.
I hope it means he goes for it on every fourth and one. I'm into that. Just go for it every single time.
Spinning fullback wildcat.
Yes. Go for it every time. Oh, never punt. Onside kick every time.
So we're not going to see a ton of Wildcat anymore, right?
He does not seem to be a Wildcat believer.
Yeah. Now, Chief, I've gone into this in depth. Wildcat was Auburn's most successful formation under Gus Malzahn. More touchdowns were scored out of Wildcat by percentage than any other formation.
What they're there for?
Yeah. What else are we doing here? If it's not scoring touchdowns.
Touchdown play.
Yeah.
He will throw literally every other formation at you, but I have not noticed a ton of Wildcat in what I've seen from his past Boise State offenses.
He also loves.
I did see the double handoff play, which I'm excited about.
He loves trick plays.
Double handoff with two H-backs standing next to each other. Still trying to figure out that play.
I hope like he's not like every other coach that takes a big job and is known as the trick play guy and then just gets that ground out of him. Tuberville was the Riverboat Gambler and
Gus.
Gus.
Conservative coach ever.
Yeah. And Ron Rivera was Riverboat Ron and he became super conservative, not that long into his career as head coach of the Panthers. So.
Yeah,
it's weird that we're talking like these gambling coaches now and the ones that go for it that have these reputations and like statistically like John Harbaugh is the most bold head coach in the NFL.
Yeah,
and it's like the boring Harbaugh brother is the one that's spicy.
Well, you don't want a Shaka Smart situation where Shaka Smart got to Texas and decided to quit running.
Yeah,
the crazy press. An offense that he ran that got him to Texas because he was like, it's hard to recruit blue chip players to want to play in this crazy system. Well, listen, champ, you were put here because of that system. Like,
and there's an Auburn angle to that too. I think Coach Flo ran into the same thing with the women's basketball team here. They had a system that they stuck to and then they went away from that in recruiting to get bigger name players and bigger name recruits, and it did not work. And she flat out said, "We got the wrong players. Mm-hmm. We have to start over." And now they're off to a pretty good start this year. Considering where they've been the last couple of years, because they're going back to that style again. And you kind of have to you kind of have to do that, from time to time.
Sometimes you got to get the players for your system
doing that as well.
Yeah.
Be Rick Pitino. Don't be Shaka Smart. Rick Pitino, who took the job with the Celtics and was like, I'm going to press all the time.
Yeah. I'm going to do the one thing that no NBA team has ever been able to do. Yeah.
Probably cost him, his NBA career. Yeah. But hey.
Don't be Rick Pitino.
If we wanted Rick Pitino, we could have hired Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
Just be yourself is all I'm saying.
Man doesn't know how to take a knee.
I once asked a coach friend of mine, like, when I was a kid, I asked one of my high school coaches, like, why why don't NBA teams press? And he was like, you should watch an Allen Iverson game and then try to explain to me how.
Yeah.
How you press that guy.
Yeah. It'd be a waste of time.
We had so in high school we played full court press. Barely had a set offense. We just ran everything out of like secondary breaks and stuff like that. Just kind of freelanced a lot, just because all we did was try to force turnovers. And yeah, there would be questions like this, like, why don't we do what like all like these other teams are doing? It's like, you know, those other teams, you can't ask those type of people to do that.
Right.
Like when I was a junior in high school, we played we were in the same region as KT Harrell and Brubaker Tech was. And like KT was a 5-star, Brew Tech was like nationally ranked. We tried to run that crap against them. They had like 3 D1 players. No. And it's like, well, why can't we just pull it out and like try to do what they do? It's like, yeah, if we tried to do what they do, they would beat us by 80. Like,
yeah. This is they're beating you either way.
Yeah.
Take your medicine.
How much do you just want to be annoying while you're playing, you're getting beat? That's the whole style.
So let's talk a little bit more about style, about Harsin's. Like, on your podcast, your excellent podcast with Painter Sharpless, in which you discuss the Harsin hire. We recorded a podcast at the exact same time, by the way, because I listened to yours and the news of Turbo Jones transferring hit in the middle of your recording. I was like, oh, it hit in the middle of ours, too. But yours, you mentioned that Harsin's offense is difficult to describe because he runs so many different formations, but it's not like it's slow, but it's definitely different than what we're used to. It's just not throwing the ball across the yard either.
So there's a meme among people who cover college football. It's like you get to a press conference and the new coach says, we're going to be multiple.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to be attacking on defense. We're going to be multiple on offense. And it's like, everybody says that, but like Boise State's one of the few teams that truly are multiple on offense, because they will throw everything at you. And you have to. Like, it was out of necessity at Boise State, because you get the players who you can get. And then he takes who he can get and like, we have something for you. Are you good at this? Well, we'll start calling plays like this out of formations like this that you're good at, because we can – it's very adaptable, which I think is going to be interesting with SEC talent. Everything, like, you are going to see if it's like he was at Boise State, and there's going to be some transition, obviously. But there's a lot of, you know, they'll go 5 wide and then they'll go under center. Like, yes, you're going to see Auburn go under center again. You're going to see quarterback sneaks out of under center sets. You're going to see them run out of, you know, 4 wide, 4 and 5 wide. You're going to see them, you know, take deep shots out of power sets. Like, their whole goal is every blade of grass or blue turf can be used, and every player who has an eligible receiver number can either be running the ball, catching the ball, or even sometimes throwing the ball, because it's all about keeping you off balance. Because at Boise State, their whole mantra was, you know, even though they're like against Mountain West teams, they were really, really talented. But like when they wanted to beat the Washingtons and the Georgias and, you know, all this of the world, the Oklahomas, they can't just run up and out talent anybody. They're in the middle of nowhere. They have to go. They have to work really, really hard to get recruits in. So it's all about keeping everybody off balance. And that's where the Auburn thing makes why part of the reason I think he's at Auburn is that at Auburn, you're going to be a top 15 team in talent. That probably means you're going to be a top 6 or 7 team in the SEC in terms of talent. So what are you going to do to overcome the fact that Alabama, Georgia, usually Florida, usually LSU, usually Texas A&M all have more talent than you, you know, most of the time, but you're still a really, really good football team. So you have to have some underdog tactics. And like, nobody has been more consistent and unpredictable with their underdog tactics on the offensive side of the ball than Boise State under Brian Harsin. And that goes back to when he was a coordinator under Chris Peterson.
So he's not a Gus hurry up, no huddle, but he's also not a Jimbo Fisher weird I formation, grind the game down to a powder.
They run like what I would call NFL tempo, and the fact that it varies.
Yeah.
You know, there's different levels of it. There was a thing that went around a few months ago where people were breaking down like how the Patriots call tempo and like the 7 different versions of tempo they call. It's like that. Sometimes they will go full hammer down, you know, no huddle, you know, let's get out there at warp speed, the NASCAR style. And then sometimes they're going to take their time. They're going to sit back. They're going to work the clock. They'll go. It's all about keeping people off balance, because – especially in this day and age, if you go full speed, defenses are kind of used to that at that point. And the one thing about going full speed that quickly is that it can be predictable on offense. You kind of limit yourself in what you can do with the substitutions and the formations. And that's the thing about the Gus offense, right? When it works, it blew everybody out of the water because it's so effective. But when it's not working, it can be pretty predictable. You kind of can know what's coming. And now you bring in a guy whose whole thing is, we're going to make sure no one knows what's coming. And that's been his MO at Boise State. And I think that's what he's going to try to bring to Auburn.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm
also excited, tight ends. But
also managing my expectations. Trying to manage my expectations, because life is about managing expectations.
It's like we knew he was coming because we recruited all these tight ends for the last year.
A lot of beef in that room.
Years. My favorite stat that I dug out from my story is that Auburn has had one tight end in the last 10 years catch double-digit passes in a season, like a true tight end. That was CJ Uzomah, who did it in – or not 10 years, the Miles on here, so 8 years, who did it in 14. Boise State every year under Harsin had two tight ends catch double-digit passes every single year. They use tight ends. Like, there were a couple plays that I saw on there where they just were like, all right, here we go, 13 personnel. We're going to run three tight ends on the field. What are you going to do with it? And it's like – and they'll take deep shots out of it. And they'll do – I mean, guys are Swiss Army knives. The guy who split time with Joey Gatewood at quarterback in Jacksonville went to Boise State, didn't work out as a quarterback there, ended up going and playing tight end. And, like, they run tight end sweeps sometimes. Like, they do a bunch of just wild stuff. Like, they've got a big old dude, and I can't remember his name off the top of my head. They got a dude who's very J.J. Pegues-like.
I was about to say.
They're going
to
move him around and do a bunch of weird stuff with him.
I hope he throws for 10 yards in the game. Just 10-yard touchdown for J.J. Pegues.
Harsin's got to be licking his lips thinking about J.J. Pegues right now, because dude can do anything.
So they have J.J. Pegues. They have Brandon Frazier. So here you go, 6'7" tight end that you can try. John Samuschenker is still around.
Had
a really good season as a blocker. Grant Calcaterra is coming in. You still have Tyler Fromm. You also brought in Landon King. There's seven tight ends could be on this roster next year.
One of these guys is moving to fullback, though, right?
That's the other thing. Is like, I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of go under center some sets and just tell Luke Deal, hey, just hit the linebacker as hard as humanly possible and let Tank or somebody run behind him. It's an easy thing, and I've said it a couple times now on different podcasts, and including the one that the Crow was talking about. The thing I always point back to is my dad on NCAA 14 always played with the Boise State playbook because it had everything. And you watch Boise State play football under Brian Harsin, it's like, yep, that's where it kind of mirrors your life. They do everything. It is kind of NFL-ish in terms of like, all right, we can go under center. We can play fast. We can play slow. We can spread it out. We can do all these different things. And the great Brian Harsin experiment is, all right, you were super consistent doing that. You had a well-established floor. You were really, really good at getting a bunch of wins. You played above your fighting weight over and over again at Boise State. All right, we're going to give you SEC talent and SEC resources. What can you do with it? And that's the experiment. Can you do what Gus was not able to do, which is be consistent? Not to say that Gus didn't have his high moments. It's like, all right, let's just not drop off nearly as much is the thing. And you couldn't find a more consistent coach to go out and get unless his name is, Nick Saban or Dabo Swinney. And I don't think you're going to get either of those guys.
The worrying issue is what you're describing seems to be the opposite of a plug-and-play offense. Like, it sounds like it's going to take months and months and months of prep for guys, for a Bo Nix or a Tank Bigsby to learn this offense.
The transition's going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And they don't have a normal offseason to do it in.
Hopefully we'll get closer to a normal offseason this year. But, it's not going to be – still not going to be as normal. I will say this. The one thing that you can kind of counter with that is like I said earlier, it's very adaptable. So, like, if it might not be the full kitchen sink already, but it's, like, the parts of the kitchen sink that work well with Auburn and that they kind of can be familiar with from time to time, like doing stuff like kind of wing TE kind of stuff out of the shotgun, going 10 personnel a lot, like, and playing fast that way. I would expect him to kind of mix it and, like, gradually kind of mix in some stuff like that. But it's adaptable. And one of the things, and one of my buddies who I used to work with at The Athletic, he got laid off the same time I did, used to cover Boise State. We were talking, and I've read some stuff from him in the past where he's talked about one of the things that Boise State did a really good job of under Harsin is that if they brought a player in and they were good at something, they would just build something to make it work for him. And the criticism of the Gus offense, like I said, when it worked. The criticism of the Gus offense is you had to play a role, and he literally wrote a book on it. Like, it's why people like me can sit there and like act like experts of the Gus Malzahn offense, because it didn't necessarily change a ton, right? So his whole thing was what Dave was telling me is, like, at Boise State, they did a really good job of, like, they got, like, a 5'8", receiver. It's like, all right, what are we going to do with this guy? Well, he's not necessarily super fast, but he's really good at catching, really good at catching balls in traffic. Like, he was just a really hard-to-cover slot receiver who had really sure hands. So they built, like, a lot of third and short packages about just getting him the ball. Like, they just worked on a lot of quick stuff with him. And it's just build the offense around that. So I think it's going to take, when he comes in and realizes who his roster is going to be and what all that's going to comprise of, then it kind of goes to work and saying, all right, what fits Bo Nix? What fits Tank Bigsby? What fits whatever receivers are left? What fits our offensive line? What fits all these tight ends? And then try to cobble it together, because this doesn't seem like an offense is like, well, if you can't do this, we don't have a spot for you. Like, they'll throw it and run it with pretty much anybody, like I said, and they go very deep.
And does he call the plays?
He did. I don't think he hasn't recently, but there was a stretch at Boise State where he did. I would not expect him to call plays at Auburn, just because it's a new thing, and it's a big jump to make.
Yeah.
So his OC, whoever it is who brings in, will need to be able to basically put in this massive package of plays and then call.
It's going to be interesting to see, because I think they have, it's going to be a transition. And it was a transition to the Chad Morris offense. Like, as much as it kind of looked, like I said, pretty similar, there were some new tweaks and stuff in there that they threw in that were very not Malzahn-y, that they had to learn. And, like, that was a big thing this offseason, was how much they had to, quote, learn a new offense. And so it'll be an even bigger transition, I think, this year.
Yeah.
How much of the offense is going to be predicated on whoever the offensive coordinator is, and how much of it is Harsin's offense, though?
That's a great question, and I think it depends on who it's going to be, because so much of his staff is – a lot of people are asking, like, what does this mean for recruiting? How many SEC guys is he going to bring in? You got to know the area. Coordinator would be a very interesting hire in that regard, because I think, he had a track record at Boise State of different, and he had several different offense coordinators. He was an offense coordinator itself, but that MO of still, be multiple, spread things out, do a lot of different things, kind of carried over no matter what. So it might have a different flavor depending on who the offensive coordinator is, but I fully expect we would see kind of that, that truly multiple philosophy still carry over.
So, gun to your head, is Bo Nix starting quarterback week one of next year?
That's a great question. Probably. But, look, man, Demetrius Davis is enrolling early. He's real good. I don't know if y'all know that yet. He's real good.
I watched his last game.
And if you want to, like, hit a reset button, and, like, there's going to be high expectations no matter what at Auburn. It doesn't matter who you are. Because, like, if they go 8-4 next year or whatever, it's going to be like, why did we get rid of Gus to do this again? Like, you're going to hear that anyway. But, like, going to another quarterback would help you out a little bit in terms of, like, hey, we're starting over. But I think there's room for Bo Nix to do well on offense, because he's had a very wide range of different types of quarterbacks in his systems, and specifically seeing a lot what they do with guys like rolling out, running the quarterbacks some as well, the quick game, and also just trying to develop that deep ball that he needs to get. Tire up on the play action work they do. They do a lot of play action, which Bo has been pretty good at in his career when they go to it. There's potential for Bo to be a good quarterback under Brian Harsin. It's not going to be like the challenge just got. He was as soon as Joey left, it was him. Like, they could have bring in. Everybody wants to talk about Cord. Everybody wants to talk about the kid they brought in for Bowling Green. They want to do all that stuff. The challenge steps up because now you're getting the winningest quarterback in Texas high school football history coming right in and saying, all right, here's what I'm really good at.
And Justin, I've watched now two of his games on the TV here because they broadcast them live in the playoffs. And he's not just good. He is there's no sniff of stress. He just walks around the field like, this is my field. We're not going to lose. We hadn't lost a game now in 28 straight.
Yeah.
So, last week, they were up big, and then the team came back on him. He didn't even change facial expressions. He went out there and just balled out again, threw a couple more touchdowns, ran for one, won the game big. He is a clinical assassin on the field.
Sounds like my favorite quarterback, Nick Marshall.
Well, it is the thick Marshall.
This is not.
We're going to get his stick.
I'm not saying Nick Marshall-esque in terms. He didn't have dead face. More like, I don't know, Ryan, you don't remember this, but there was a guy who played quarterback for the Falcons named Michael Vick. And
ring a bell.
And Michael Vick, his rookie year used to I remember his first game, he walked down on the field and pulled chapstick out of his helmet and put some chapstick on and then put it back in his helmet before he took his first snap. I'm so cool, I got chapstick in my helmet because I know I'm not going to get hit that hard. That's what Demetrius Davis reminded me of. This ain't that big of a deal, guys. We're going to win this game.
He's got that demeanor, and on the field, he runs so smoothly, and he's got that kind of – the first guy's going to miss every time. I've rarely seen him get tackled on first contact. I'll just call it what it is, and this is a high and lofty comparison to make, and he's got a lot of pressure on him Bo had and any other really good quarterback will ever have. But I'm just gonna say, dude plays like Lamar Jackson. He looks like Lamar Jackson when he plays. The way he runs and the way he kind of, it's very Lamar-esque in terms of when he tucks it and goes, watch out, because he's gonna be hard to bring down, and he's gonna make your life pretty miserable in a variety of ways. Now, he's also got the Lamar thing in that he's not the most, flawless passer in the world. Doesn't have a giant arm or anything like that, but he gets the job done. He really does get the job done. And I think with proper coaching at the college level, he could really be unleashed. I mean, I think Auburn got their second chance at a Lamar Jackson type of player, except for this Lamar Jackson has been through the fire at playing at the second best high school in the country, the highest classification to Texas, and winning state championships left and right.
He played in front of 15,000 people the other day.
during COVID.
And it's and that's kind of a normal thing for that school. North Shore is factory.
Massive, massive, massive. They put out so much talent there. And the only team that you could say is probably better than them in high school football in the country is IMG, which is literally an academy just for football players to come in and play.
North Shore,
we can say that about other places, but that is literally their purpose.
North Shore is a public school.
So every time this comes up, I have to ask, why is he coming to Auburn?
Right?
He loves it too. Loves it.
That was the thing. When they fired Gus, and I don't know about y'all, I don't think Chad Morris is going to be the offensive coordinator at Auburn in 2021. No. I don't think so. And he was a Chad guy, right?
Right.
I was surprised that he was just all on board.
I'm signing on Tuesday.
It's wild, man. Other bigger name programs that weren't going in Texas, they've got to get the five-star. They got to get the golden arm guy. Yeah. They have to get that kind of guy. A&M's got a little bit of that too, especially with Jimbo now. So I think in-state wise, he kind of gets, because he's not tall. He doesn't have the build of a normal quarterback. And A&M, Jimbo Fisher would have no idea what to do with that guy. He'd move him to wide receiver. He would have no idea what to do. And Texas has been really hard after Quinn Ewers, or however you pronounce his name. All those five-star guys, I think it's just one of – he was committed to Virginia Tech. It took Auburn a little while to get on board with him. I think it's just people just say, does he have the traits? I think it's just elite programs falling in love with traits more than anything, because he doesn't necessarily go to these camps and ball out. You know, he's gotten knocked a little bit, like Elite 11 and stuff like that. Because he's like, oh, well, he doesn't have as much zip on the ball, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, yeah, but like he wins a lot of football games and he's very hard to tackle. Like
he has won 28 straight football games.
He has won more football games in the state of Texas than Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
That is absurd.
And Kyler Murray won 4 state championships.
Kyler never lost. Kyler never lost.
And this dude's about to win his 4th if he wins 2-3 more games. He's in the Elite 8 this weekend.
Good God, how long do those playoffs go?
Well, yeah, they go for a while. There's a lot of schools, Chief.
And Texas started late, too.
And the state started super late.
I think Georgia's still kind of going
usually,
through.
Yeah, Georgia State Championship's on the 30th.
Usually Christmas Eve is like, that's like the state championships. It's like the week of Christmas. So they're about 2 weeks behind.
Okay.
Yeah, Alabama, sure. we got this done early. We're like,
yeah, we're done.
I mean, they were playing it. The first high school game I covered this year was like in late August. I remember the other day it was brutally hot.
Do you remember
covered football this year?
Remember in the early days of COVID when no one knew what the heck was going on, and
we still don't.
But the early thought was, oh, I bet hot weather will kill this virus. And then there was somebody in the NCAA. It leaked that there was this rumor going around of a summer college football, moving the college football season up to starting in July. And it got shot down because everyone was like, oh, Auburn versus LSU in the third week of July? That's a terrible idea. Like, this is – someone's going to die tailgating. It's
Auburn, LSU in the fourth circle of hell. Just here we go.
You just have to play every game at basketball. Night if you did
they
that.
They should have done basketball. Just push the tournament to, like, the summer or something. Yeah. But we were all still super freaked out.
No one knew what – because it was like the tournament was canceled and everybody was like, we're never going to play sports again in person. And then, like, 3 weeks later, it was like, no, man, let's just play them in the summer. It's like, somebody make up their minds.
And then we got into the season in which we hadn't.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. We'll talk a little hoops. And we're back 32 minutes exactly into this podcast. If you're still listening, it's me, Son of Crow, Ryan Starrett, the AU Chief, and guest. Always welcome guest, friend of the program, Justin Ferguson. Justin, what have you noticed about the Auburn basketball season, about this Auburn basketball team that most might not have noticed yet?
That's a really good question. This isn't something that's like going to take anybody by surprise, and it's something I wrote about this week. This Auburn team is one of the deepest teams in America. And, like, they're so deep, and they're relying on that depth because it's working. And you usually don't get that out of such a young team. Like, Bruce came in early in the year. He was like, oh, we got to play all these guys because I got to figure out who's, like, separating themselves. And you had Justin Powell get off to a blazing start. Alan Flanagan, great offensive game to go along with what has already been a really good defensive game. Jalen Williams is as rock solid as it come on both ends of the floor. And so they got some separation, but it was like at the time they started separating, at the time they started finding like their key guys, you know, Chris Moore and Dylan Carwell and Stretch Akinbola and Jamal Johnson are like playing their best basketball. So this is a team that it's really, really funny to see because like this would be the year to kind of will things down and focus in. You got some big guys coming in next year. You don't know when Sharif's coming back. Might tighten things up a little bit in the rotation. And Auburn's just embraced their depth, and like they're the deepest rotation in the SEC, and they play the third most bench minutes of any team. We give minutes to all these guys because they all came back. It's like, no, we just got to figure out who's going to play. And like, oh wow, they're playing really, really well. Let's keep giving them minutes and figuring things out. So I think it's that depth that, you know, I was not expecting. Like, I thought at some point there was going to be kind of like a shrinking down process. Haven't really gotten that yet because the bench has played so well, and that's going to be key for them because they're going to have to rely on that to get through what is going to be a very tough SEC slate. Like, after they play Arkansas Wednesday, 5 of their next 7 are on the road, and the 2 home games are against Alabama and Kentucky at home. So, good luck. Yeah.
I think we've developed the opposite problem in that not having enough guys that can go. Like, we're trying to figure out, well, how do we get Javon Franklin on the floor and get him more minutes? Like, we don't even have enough minutes to give out at this point, which is kind of crazy.
Like, Chris Moore does one thing a game that makes you go, oh, dude, he should be playing a ton. But then so does like nine other dudes. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like Chris Moore and Dylan Carwell, especially the energy guys off the bench, have played such great basketball during this winning streak. And it's like, yeah, get them some more opportunities. And then you think, no, the guys ahead of them are, one of them is a dude that was the most efficient player Auburn had last season, just was coming off the bench, and Jalen Williams. He can do everything offensively and defensively at a high level. The other dude's 6'10" and plays like a shooting guard, and like does things like put his entire torso above the rim whenever he feels like it.
Yeah.
Like that's when you start going like, huh. And that's the thing about Auburn that's so fascinating to me moving forward. This year was all about development and getting guys ready for what's going to come up next and like figuring that out. Okay, well, you might go 10 or 11 deep this year, or you're 9 or 10 deep. Sharif Cooper hasn't played yet. Jabari Smith is the best player you've ever gotten, and like he's coming in next year. Trey Alexander is going to be awesome, I think, as a shooting guard in Bruce Pearl's system. He's going to be coming in. Like, there's still so much room. And then it's like, all right, year two of what JT Thor, year two of possibly of Justin Powell and these guys, like year two of Sharif if he comes there. It's pretty mind-boggling because it's like it's a team that these guys are all playing with high energy levels at the point where, like, you know, none of them want to lose playing time. They're fighting for their lives to get more playing time. And it's like, oh, and it's only going to get tougher from here. And I think that's a sign of a great culture.
Well, and Bruce is a genius to the point where this podcast's opinion is that he hid Jalen Williams on the bench last year because if he played him more, he would have gone pro. And we stand by that. And I think that he needs to do the same thing with JT Thor.
Yeah,
because if JT Thor starts balling out here in the next couple of weeks,
well, he's going to put somebody on a poster every game.
There's no chance he sticks around because he's 6'10".
JT Thor is the NBA scout's dream.
Oh yeah, he's gigantic. Put him on a poster. Put him on the put him in front of your fan base. Get him in a jersey. Great.
He's all wingspan. Super athletic. He's already playing well without necessarily being like super super knowledgeable of the system yet on offense and defense. He's already playing so well. He can handle the ball. He can play face up. He's very, very much a modern power forward.
And he's super young.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're like, and he's not even supposed to be here right now. Like, he's technically younger than the rest of these dudes. And every NBA scout is going to be like, that's who we want. Cause it's all about potential. It's all about like, look at a team. Like, you know, my brother's a huge Oklahoma City Thunder fan. And so I end up watching the Thunder a lot with him from time to time. And like, they have a team of like Darius Bazley and Hamidou Diallo and Lugansz Dort, where it's like these dudes weren't necessarily household names. They're like, oh yeah, but they're like 17 years old and can jump out of the gym. And they're like, sign us up.
And they've like, got like 30 first round picks in the next 3 years. So
right.
He'll probably
it's all,
be
it's
a Thunder.
Upside. It's all upside. Like JT Thor is going to be the like Jason Tatum's only 19. Like he's going to be like, JT Thor is going to be 18 for 10 years because that's what it's going to feel like. And you know, especially when he gets in NBA circles.
You can already picture him in like a 36-button suit shaking Adam Silver's hand. Like you can already picture him doing it. Like he's got that build of like,
I mean,
his suit's going to fit right.
We've seen Kevin Durant do this. Yeah, so
like,
I can't measure his wingspan like myself because of COVID, but like I found a wingspan measurement from him when he was a sophomore in high school where he has the exact same dimensions as Giannis. Like the exact same wingspan, the exact same height. And it's like, though they're rare. They're rare for a reason.
Yeah.
And I remember when Auburn got him and it was like, oh, Auburn gets this four-star power forward. Like, all right. And like, it was like, oh, that's a pretty good big up. But everybody's like, yeah, Sharif. And then some of these, I think everybody was still obsessed with the Jalen Green sweepstakes and all that and all that stuff. And then you get to the point where you start reading up on it's like, oh yeah, if he'd have stayed in his normal class, he could have been the number one player in the country.
Yeah,
in the 2021 class. So it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you kind of forget how good he is sometimes, and then
there's a greater than zero chance that Auburn has two players leave after this year to the NBA draft, and those two players are Justin Powell and JT Thor, which is no one would have expected that going into this year, but you watch the first game, like, oh yeah, those dudes are playing NBA basketball.
Because there's a precedent now with Bruce Pearl guys. Because the Bruce Pearl guys, you know, coming out of Auburn, like, I love him to death. He was a great dude to cover. But, like, there's most guys, Jared Harper's size should not be playing in the NBA.
Yeah, right. That's true.
But it's the fact that the preparation he got in the like, they know what you're going to get out of him. It's he's that kind of player. They're not taking 5'10" point guards from anywhere, right? So you have that. You know of what Chuma Okeke's done in his rehabilitation in Orlando. He got really good reviews, and he's off to a solid start in the NBA. And then you get a dude like Isaac Okoro, where it's like, oh, this guy wasn't even supposed to be a draft pick. And we made him the number 5 pick after 1 year. Yeah. So, yeah, it's possible a dude like
Ballard. And he was the Cavs' best player in preseason.
Yeah.
And that isn't hyperbole. He legitimately was.
Shout out to Damon Davis for getting weight on these guys' frames, too, because if you could see a before and after picture of Isaac even coming in, it was insane. And Thor, he put 20 freaking pounds on during COVID before the season started.
That's a lot of PB&Js.
And that helps them go a long way, along with what they do on the floor. The fact that they get the size before they even get into the NBA helps out a lot.
Ryan, do you have any Arkansas stats in front of you?
I don't have anything on Arkansas quite yet, but before we do, I just want to talk about Alan Flanagan because we
another guy that might not be here next year.
Insane offensive year, and last year, I mean, I remember we said on this podcast almost every week, it's like, yeah, he's just not ready offensively. Like he looks like he knows what he's doing on the court, but he just doesn't have the shot, doesn't have whatever. And now it looks like he's Isaac Okoro with a 3-point shot,
and
like he's shooting 39% from three right now.
And so this might be incredible. This is his team. This is Alan Flanagan's team. Yep. Last year you wouldn't have called it Isaac Okoro's team, despite.
No, it was Samir's team last year.
Yeah, it was Samir's team. This is Flanagan's team. Like, he's the leader. And I'd like to see anybody tell him that he's not.
And he's just picking up point guard halfway through the season.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, ah.
He has, but as a sophomore, he's one of the best offensive players through 8 games that, you know, we've seen in a while. It's impressive.
He's shooting the three better than Isaac did last year.
Oh, significant. I mean, he's shooting the three. I'll have to double check this, but I think after he's shooting it so at about poorly the same range.
He was awful last year.
Yeah. And here's another example, not to derail it too much. His shooting was rough last season. Like, offensively, he just wasn't a factor whenever he's on the floor, but his defense was so good you wanted to put him in there if you're Auburn. Yeah. Likewise, last season, Jamal Johnson was your best shooter, but in his own words, was a liability on defense. He just couldn't do it. Now Auburn is a better team on both ends of the floor with Jamal Johnson on the floor. The man was plus 33 the other day.
Yeah.
In a game where he didn't really score that much because he makes things happen, and it also helps that if you're in lockdown and you're in COVID, it helps when your dad played in the NBA and was a first-round pick and was a really good wing in his own right. And he's like, hey, I'll teach you how to play defense. And he's like, all right, well, we have nothing to do for the next 5 months. Might as well do this.
Yeah. Well,
I want to ask, what specifically is he doing that is working? I mean, without really knowing X and O's as well as some of you guys do, like, he's obviously, when he's on the court, Auburn is better. Like, that's just a fact this year. But,
well, on the offensive end,
the box score doesn't really show up. So what is it that he's doing?
Offensively, he knows what he's doing. There's so much of it. There's so much guys on this team that are still learning and needing to know where to go. The fact that you can put a dude in there like him, he knows where to be. He can help kind of set, get people in the right spot. I think that helps Auburn flow better on the offensive end. He also takes care of the ball. Like, of any guard that touches the ball a decent bit for Auburn, he has the lowest turnover rate on the team. Defensively, he just moves better. Like, I asked Bruce about this specifically. I was like, oh, what did he get better at? He was like, he just laterally, he's just quicker. Like, you can tell he put in the work athletically and physically with his dad, with the Auburn trainers, with all that in the offseason, and say, I got to get better at this. I can't be so stiff, playing on-ball defense in this league.
His positioning is what I've noticed to be way better.
He's in the right place all the time on both ends of the floor. He's in the right place. He's where he is supposed to be.
Meanwhile, you have a dude like JT Thor who can get away with not being in the right place because he has a 7'3" wingspan. Yeah. He's like, all right, well.
He can be 7 feet out of position and still make a play.
JT Thor is that guy you're playing pickup with that you beat off the dribble and you're like, oh, I got this reverse layup. And then all of a sudden you just feel a shadow over your head.
It just goes right into the side of the backboard.
It's like the big bird in Avatar, you know?
Yes.
You guys remember that movie?
Sure.
Thor can do that, and Dylan Carwell can get away with stuff a lot of time because he's just going to be like, whatever he's doing, it's going to be 200 miles an hour. Like, I know that.
They've somehow taken Malik's energy, yes. Horace's energy, Simeon Bowers' sometimes energy when he wasn't, you know, just being Simeon loafing around, and combined it into one dude. And
into a Shaq-sized body.
He's chaotic good. He's chaotic good 100% of the time.
Yes.
He's got a lot of Montrezl Harrell to his game.
Yes.
Sure.
I say that after a guy, now that I've watched like 3 Lakers games this year and like watched a lot of Clippers last year playing the Mavs, a lot of Montrezl Harrell without some of the Montrezl Harrell like head KC stuff, kind of like always talking trash constantly.
Dylan Carwell plays like he's like Austin Wiley with an addiction to like Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Like the dude just gets fired at all moments.
I don't get the impression that he trash talks at all.
It's
all
like positive energy at himself.
It's like crazy positive energy.
I said it at one point. He's like, whenever he gets done playing basketball, he can go into professional wrestling because the dude is going to cut a promo. He's going to bring tremendous energy. He can get the fans on the side. He's walking charisma. Like the fact that he has played his games at Auburn and not in front of a packed house. When he did the full like Ric Flair thing up the floor, like after taking that charge, we'd still be hearing the crowd right now over there. Yeah.
He did that in front of like 14 people. It really is hilarious to think about that.
And now that you say that, like he's something that teams desperately need right now with no crowd. A guy that's just that big ball of energy when you can't get it from anywhere else at the moment that is priceless.
And the funny thing is that he's that way, that Carwell's that way. But Chris Moore and Stretch Akinbola would be the most energetic dudes on any other team in Division One basketball.
Right, right.
And they're 2-3 on this team.
Stretch has played.
I had it described to me this way. Dylan is the loud one. You know, Stretch is the loud one. Dylan is the hyper one. That was what it was. Stretch just yells. Stretch is just, I mean, I don't know if Ryan, you were at a game.
Yeah, I was at the Troy game.
Right. I don't know how well you can pick it up on TV. Stretch, when he's on the floor, you could hear him anywhere. Like, it's just like he is so loud barking out stuff. And then you've got Carwell, who when he's sitting on the bench, he's hopping up and down. Like jumping over chairs and stuff like that. Like, that's,
I don't know.
Him.
Stretch has improved so immensely from the small amount of run he would get last year. I was like, he shouldn't be on the court. This year, it's like, oh, no, this dude watched, like, hours of Kevin Garnett videos and now is on the court just screaming at people and throwing things into the stands. It's unbelievable.
Ryan, I know you're in, you know, you do a lot of stuff even more in depth than I do with advanced numbers. There was that stretch for a while where, like, Stretch had one of the best offensive ratings on the team just period. It's like, he wasn't scoring. It was just Auburn played better when he was on the floor on offense. Yeah. And it was the most mind-boggling thing. And, like, I could never figure it out.
Well, it was because he was making every shot he took. He might only take 2 shots over 20 minutes, but he was making both of them.
And the other thing was, Auburn was better as an offense. His offensive rating was so high when they were on the floor. Auburn's offense was so better when he was on the floor because he was getting every offensive rebound. His offensive rebounding is just crazy. And the other thing is, he's top 100 in D1 right now in block percentage.
Yeah.
For a dude who doesn't play a ton, that's pretty impressive. And yeah, like that can get you some easy buckets on the other end as well. That's the other thing. This team hasn't even done that yet. They haven't even gotten full court, forced a ton of turnovers, get on the break, Auburn yet. They're getting the basics down and still playing
particularly
well.
And for a team that's still trying to figure out its offensive game, it is an unbelievably good offensive rebounding team.
Yeah.
And that's going to pay huge dividends once the team actually is able to connect on second chance points. And defensive rebounding, a couple of the dudes are legitimately elite at boxing out and getting defensive rebounds,
which was what Wiley was so good at last year.
Yes.
Why he was on the floor so much.
Austin Wiley was a defensive rebounding
rate on the team. Well, yeah. I just want to throw that out there.
And the other thing, he works hard at it. He cares about it. He's always crashing the glass. He's also a rebound vulture if you watch him sometimes. Yeah. Like he will swoop in and like grab it because he's like, oh, I've got a pretty good wingspan. Like
he's not that Russell Westbrook anymore. Like I'm one rebound away from a triple double. Let me go ahead and take this from you.
He's gonna get a triple double this year. I know it.
I think so too, man. I think we're really Auburn hasn't had one in a while.
Yeah.
And so I think we're creeping in on this is the season.
There's so much about this team that is still like Bruce said it after the Appalachian State game, like I got to get Powell more shots. Like they're not creating on the fast break enough. They're not forcing enough turnovers. They still don't have a really consistent inside scoring game this season. And yet, they're still playing this well. They're going to be there are some legitimately really good teams in the SEC this season. Like, I think Auburn's going to play one of them Wednesday night with Arkansas, just the way Musselman wants to play offense. They're going to be tough. Tennessee looks just unreal good this year. Kentucky is still there are some really good teams in the SEC this year, and Auburn's going to be very annoying to play against. They're going to get out-talented. They're never going to get out-manned. They're never going to get out-manned.
I think that's Bruce's whole goal in life is just to be annoying. Annoy everyone that you play. No one should want to play you because it sucks to play you.
So that's the thing, and we can tie this a little bit quickly to Harsin, is like that's Auburn. Like you're not – Auburn's recruiting really, really well in basketball, and they recruit really, really well in football. You're still – most of the time, you're Auburn. You're not going to get number one, number two, number three recruiting classes. But what makes Auburn – at their best, if you go back in basketball and in football, their best moments of in recent years especially is just when they were so annoying to teams that should have beat them and they lost to them. And like that's an MO that I think the fan base also needs to embrace a little bit more. Like we talk about how chaos Auburn's a real thing. And like, Auburn also needs to be the team where it's like, we don't have as good a recruiting class as you. And you know what? We don't mind not have all the bells and whistles, football or basketball. But you know what we're going to do? We're going to make life really, really difficult for you. And if you don't watch out, we will beat you and make you so mad about it. You will be stewing about it for years. Like that to me is quintessential Auburn. And Pearl's got it. And I'm really interested to see if Harsin's going to tap into that.
I just want Harsin to beat Nick Saban in ways that make him annoyed. Because Gus, that was my favorite thing about Gus. He was able to beat Nick Saban in ways that annoyed Nick Saban to the point where he wanted to change the rules.
Now the thing now is going to be, like, Gus did that with Nick. Now Harsin's challenge is, all right, continue to do that with Nick. This is why it's going to be really tough. Continue to do that with Nick. Also do this with Kirby Smart. Also do this with Jimbo Fisher. Also do this with, you know, some of these other – whoever the coach at LSU is going to be. Like, who knows at this point. But that's the other thing. Not to go so far back to Harsin. But, like, that's the other thing about his, like, keep everybody off balance, keep everybody shifting kind of philosophy. Alabama's defense, which is also Georgia's defense by extent, is so complex. Like, they do stuff, and they do it offensively too, Alabama does, but defensively, they do stuff in the secondary and with their blitzes and stuff like that, that NFL teams only do. Like, they run different types of coverages. It's like, that is the only place you're going to see that in college football. The thing about really complex defenses like that is they can really, really get tied up in a knot. If you Florida did a good job against Georgia this year, and they had it for Alabama for a little while, where it was like, oh crap, like we don't know what to do here. Like this is irritating. This is really, really annoying. And I wonder how much that's gonna, like, how much can he tie the Saban tree in knots is going to be the big
question. Just takes a single X wing to go down the little weird trench on the Death Star. If I remember correctly.
And that's X-Wing's name is J.J. Pegues.
Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Build the whole offense out of J.J. Pegues Wildcat, if you ask me.
I wasn't kidding. I bet Harsin is like, I can do something with this dude. Because
have y'all noticed the thing? The NFL's done it. Florida did it in the SEC title game. Or Florida, Alabama did. But that new trend that people are doing where it's like they put a man in motion across the formation and then the guy just stops behind center and takes a snap and does a quick sneak.
Yes.
And they'll do it with like a slot receiver. Like Pegues is going to do that. You're going to see J.J. Pegues motion across the formation, turn, catch the ball, get the snap and just try to, run through someone.
He should just always be the short yardage guy. Just direct snap it to him every time.
But he just comes in and takes it under center.
One of the greatest
lots of winners in third pass, ball.
One of the greatest mysteries of the 2020 season for Auburn is why the Pegues cat worked so well so early and they never went back to it.
Well, same thing as why we did what we did against LSU and then never went back to it.
Yeah.
So here you go. Consistency. That's the word. if you haven't heard by every single Jay Googe, Alan Green letter or Brian Harsin press conference clip, consistency was a big thing that they were looking for in this.
That and flaming the internet.
Yeah, yeah. When they're not taking piling dumps on
Auburn Twitter.
Yeah, certain people.
That was a lot of fun because I could just sit back and be like, I'm part of the capital M media, but I'm not part of the lowercase M media that you're talking to right now.
So the best part of the press conference, the part that I was like,
know anything, kids.
The best part of the press conference that I was like, wow, he just did that, is when he just crapped all over Bill Cameron. And I have nothing against Bill Cameron. He's a longtime radio guy here in Auburn.
Yep.
But he asked a question, and Brian Harsin was not – he was just like, why? He just took a big dump on
it. I think he was like, well, I don't know what the questions are. So that's the thing about Harsin that's so interesting to me. This is why this is such a – I'm sure you guys said the same thing whenever you had the reaction to this. This is such a not Auburn move. And this is such a like Alan Green kind of, this is a different direction for Auburn football and Auburn athletics in general and how it was done and who they picked. But in who they picked, they get a guy in Brian Harsin where it's like, there's this, Auburn has had it throughout most of its history, at least modern history. They've had these coaches that were pretty folksy to an extent. Like Gus was a nice guy, Gene Chizik, nice guy, Tubbs. Everybody had their opinion about Tubbs and kind of his work ethic and stuff like that. But Tubbs was Tubbs. Terry Bowden was the golden boy, like all this stuff. Now you have a dude who comes in who's just like, I said this the other day to somebody. He's like, I've got to learn how to ask questions better because this dude will throw it back in my face.
Yeah.
Especially over Zoom when he doesn't have to necessarily look at me. And I don't think he would care if he did have to look at me,
I think because my paradigm of a football coach has been shaped by Auburn football. And like you said, of Tubbs saying things like it was Arkansas toad strangler on a rainy day or whatever nonsense like that. From
he's not a folksy dude. He's from the middle of nowhere, but he ain't folksy.
This dude reminds me more of like a Silicon Valley CEO where he's just like, I've had 6 Red Bulls this morning. I've got 14 meetings before noon. What is this question? I don't have time for this.
He's
very much a process-oriented guy. It's almost NFL-ish in the way it's approached.
He reminds me of Nick Saban with a little more personality. And he's not quite as ornery.
A little more height, too.
Yes. He could kick Nick Saban's ass. I think we can all safely say that.
We've got it, folks.
But he does remind me of him. He's not as prickly yet. We'll see.
Wait till that first loss.
Yeah, we'll see.
Like it's going to be interesting. It's going to be because this is uncharted territory for so many people, including us, including people who have to deal with
including him. Fans. He lost 19 games in 7 years.
Hello, now you have to play the toughest schedule in America.
This is like the best
team in your conference.
I can't remember who it was on Twitter who was like, "There's this rumors out there that Urban Meyer is being shot for NFL jobs," and this guy was like, "This guy almost died when he lost 2 games at Florida. What is he going to do on a 4-win NFL team?" Like, these guys aren't cut out for that.
No.
Yeah, I just imagine Urban Meyer like having to go to a press conference, like say he's the Jags head coach, and I hope he's not because I have friends who are Jags fans, and I wish better for them to have Urban Meyer be their head coach. But like, I can just imagine Urban Meyer like coming into a press conference on like an early November Sunday afternoon, and he's just like staring holes through the podium because they gave up 235 rushing yards. And there's nothing you could have done about it. Like it will be one of those games where it's one of those games where Derrick Henry's like, I can tell you exactly where I'm running. I'm going to tell you exactly who I'm going to run into, and he's not going to get me, so it doesn't matter. And like Urban Meyer's just sitting there, just being like, and then you have and it's not in the face of the NFL where like if you lose enough, like it's actually a good thing. Like the Jags, good job, you lost that much. The Falcons, Younghoe Koo, best kicker in the league this season, puts one right, wide right, and it's like, yay! Like, yeah, Urban Meyer is like chewing glass on the sidelines.
Yeah, not cut out for that.
It's a whole lot of sad Papa John's pizza.
Exactly. For fans. I just hope that Brian Harsin is more well adjusted as a human to be able to handle a 3-loss, 4-loss season. He hasn't had many of those.
Right.
And he might have one this year. And I hope that Auburn Twitter is okay with a 8-3 or 8-4 year with a Citrus Bowl game. Seeing Northwestern next year.
There'll be more
That's the Verbo Bowl, actually.
The Auburn, Iowa.
I mean, we're going to play a Big Ten team in Florida next year. And that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, lucky for him, the schedule does line up as favorably as it can if you're Auburn. Yep. For yep. him. So
hopefully we're playing it.
Your expectations has never been a problem at Auburn. Like that's never been a thing that anyone's ever had to deal with.
I really hope they end up make the Cotton Bowl next year in his first year. Cause I'd like to go to a game.
Get with everyone. Las Vegas Bowl. Auburn desperately needs to get out of the Florida Bowls.
Yes.
Stay away from, Music City, whatever.
Auburn, Arizona State, Las Vegas Bowl. What a party.
Texas Bowl? I'm fine with that.
What are the New Year's Six Bowls next year?
That's what I'm looking up now.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Rose Bowl in Texas this year will be fun.
This is a free podcast.
Oh, yeah, hey, next year, Cotton Bowl semifinal.
Oh, there we go. Chief. There we go.
So I do hope we make the Cotton Bowl.
Demetrius Davis doesn't lose in Texas.
When's the next time Miami, the Orange Bowl, is a semifinal? Is one of these. Yeah, next semifinal.
Year. Yeah, Cotton and Orange go together.
Sweet mother, that's what I want. Sorry, Crow.
That'd be a lot of fun. I'm just saying, if they got to go to a standard bowl, go to the Vegas Bowl and play a Pac-12 team.
Yeah, Auburn versus Arizona State. Herm Edwards versus Brian Harsin. Give me Herm Edwards versus Brian Harsin in Las Vegas. Let's get weird.
Daniel Carlson's house.
Can you imagine trying to explain Auburn's mascot situation to Herm Edwards, where he's just like, he's just like, so they're the Tigers, and then but they got an eagle and a. Hold on now.
I met Bo Jackson once.
Oh, Crow, you missed the press conference. There was a Bo Jackson, like, we've met Bo Jackson before.
In the press
conference. Random story, too. Like, it was really off the wall.
We had Bo Jackson come speak. I read that he had Bo Jackson come speak to Boise, and that was like the seed of Auburn was planted.
On the day, his running backs coach was like, hey, if I could get Bo Jackson to come talk to the team, would you want me to do it? He was like,
oh, yeah, get Bo Jackson to come talk to the team.
Yeah.
The entire state of Idaho is where Bo probably spends half the year and doesn't tell anybody.
Yeah, Bo's in town hunting a couple of elk he's been tracking.
On foot from
Wyoming.
So we know Bo was on the advisory committee, whatever you want to call it, but he wasn't part of the group that was doing the actual interviews. So I can just imagine Bo on that Zoom, if he was in a Zoom or whatever, where he just like puts in, like, he was like, I talked to Brian Harsin's team last year. He's really good. And then just logs off.
We talked about the Bo Jackson Zoom call. The Bo Jackson Zoom call was a consistent theme on our Slack of Bo is just on mute making arrows.
He can't,
on Zoom.
For some reason, he can't figure out the video. It just won't work, guys.
And then he takes himself off mute, and he consistently just makes fun of everybody thinking he's still on mute. Like, oh, yeah, there's this guy talking again. He keeps making arrows.
That's happened multiple times on Auburn Beat Zooms this year. I don't find that hard to believe.
Apparently, that really was the case with Quentin Riggins. He couldn't get the video working. So
I can't get the video to work.
Also, Crow. apparently, Alan Green and Brian Harsin met in a pool.
Yeah, I read that story too. Apparently, they met in a pool at a hotel somewhere.
He doesn't want to give any more details.
Yeah, that was a weird. That was a weird quote. I don't want to give more details. All right, Doc. What kind of conference was this?
Like AFCA.
Yeah,
where it's just like. Yeah. Where it's like, okay, you were just randomly there. AFC is usually a winner, though. I don't know, man. Like,
there's a lot of details that he could have given that make that. Yeah, there's a lot of details he could have given that make it a lot less weird. Like, if you met at a pool, we're at a hotel. We were at the hotel. We're at Disney World, summertime. They're with our kids.
Was it a Trump convention? Like, what, yeah. What was this?
I saw him at a hotel. I saw him at the hotel pool. I was there. I don't know. It was this thing we do for our dogs. We're really good at. We like to cut the hair of our dogs to look like cool shapes. I don't know. It's a whole thing. All right. Alan,
Bruce is the one that brings like, y'all together. Got it.
So here's the thing.
They're both Scientologists. That's what we remember. That was Chief's rumor, was that he's that Brad Parsons is a Scientologist.
I thought maybe Jehovah's Witnesses there for a second since they were like, yeah, we're leaving town on Christmas. We don't.
Brian Harson opens the story. He's like, all right, so we're at E3, and yeah.
Like, what? Alan Green comes up. He tells me he's completely clear. He's gone clear. No feedings. Oh. Yeah, no
feedings. Alan Green enters the pool in full Final Fantasy cosplay. I don't know why it's happening, but he has brought a giant sword into the pool, and he wants to talk about college football.
It was like 5 years ago, so Alan Green was not Auburn's athletic director. Like,
I thought he'd been Buffalo's by then.
That's
he was at Ole Miss for a bit, too. That was like the rumor that like he was at Ole Miss when Ole Miss was having to dodge NCAA questions.
Oh, Alan Green was?
Yeah.
Oh. That was part of the U thing.
Yeah, he was an assistant AD under the U thing.
So 5 years ago is when he took the Buffalo job, but he was the deputy AD at Buffalo before that. So,
because Danny White was at Buffalo, who ended up being the UCF AD.
The deputy AD. Yes. He had a badge and everything.
Yeah, man.
They were in Vegas. They were.
They didn't say where this convention was either. So.
They really should have just given one more detail. It was a coach's convention.
Was it the AVN Awards? Is that what this was?
Yeah. See?
That was the one I was waiting for, like, someone to throw in. And I was like, I think E3 is as far as I'm going to go on this one. And then,
I mean, maybe they weren't there for the convention. Maybe they were just in Vegas. But,
yeah, it's like when you go to Disney World and your mom doesn't check like what you walk up and you're like we did this one time and it nothing bad or anything, but like we did the only time I've ever been to Disney World, it was Canadian Thanksgiving, so like I'm pretty sure we were the only Americans there. And it was like, all right, yeah, everybody's talking about like, you know, just how hot it was. I was like, it's like 60 degrees outside. Yeah. Gosh, I'm sweating. I'm like, you are? Okay.
All right, guys. That was a good podcast. Thanks, Justin, for coming on. We really got a lot done today. Hopefully we learned something. Hopefully we gained some insight into the universe and into Auburn sports. Chief, always a pleasure. Ryan, likewise. Adios.